My given name by my parents is Shankara Narayana Pillai, and having come to the States, it has been shortened to simply Shankar Pillai for convenience of people. And I'm 67 years old, maybe a couple of months short of that. I'll be 67 in May. And today is March 3rd, 2006. And location-wise, where are we? We are near the World Trade Center. And the person who is taking this interview with me is my own daughter. Her name is Supriya.
Amma? Okay, I am Soumini Pillai, called Soma, and I am 62 years old. Today is March 3rd, and we are at World Trade Center, and my relationship to the interviewer is my daughter.
My name is Supriya Lakshmi Pillai. I am 30 years old. Today is March 3rd, 2006. We are at the World Trade Center, and I am interviewing my parents today. So I thought first it would be nice to hear Acha, and I call my parents Acha and Amma. Acha, if you could just tell me what some of your first memories were as a child. Tell me where you grew up and what life was like for you. I can already see you tearing up. That's okay. My parents were both born in Kerala, India. And they come from very different backgrounds, and so it'd be nice to hear a little bit about Acha's humble beginnings.
You know, it is tough for me to hold the emotions.
I wouldn't know, kill Acha. I wouldn't know, kill Damali.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm saying is that the beginnings are very, very humble, and I was born in a very remote countryside village in Kerala, that is the southernmost state of Kerala.
What's the name of the place?
Southernmost state of India. The name of the village itself is known as Thagari. The word itself is very colloquial to the area there. And it is mostly, the natural setting is mostly paddy fields, coconut groves, rivers and canals. And the area in general was known as area of backwaters. That's where the most of the rivers come to the plains and meet with the ocean. And we are from a family of basically farming people. And basically in those days, the farming was barely for subsistence and not actually much of an income for income generating purpose, just for livelihood. And so I must say that my beginning was even beyond understandable limits, way below that, very, very humble.
What do you mean?
The income-wise, even for my parents and for my sisters, it cannot even be translated into any dollar levels. There was hardly any income to live on. My father was a tuition master. You know, he would go around the village.
What does tuition master
mean? Tuition means he would tutor children in homes equally poor as our home. So it was even hard for them to pay him on a regular basis for the tuition that he gave. But he would still earn something and bring home. And that was one of the income that my family lived on. And then we had some land and where we cultivated, you know, crop, basically rice. And a little bit of land where we had coconuts as a crop. And this was our income. But life was happy because we grew up in a very culturally rich and very traditional family of the lot of relationships of people that mutually supported.
Can you tell me about how many siblings you had, those who survived and those who did not survive, their names and the age difference?
My parents had altogether 8 children born, out of which only 4 of us survived.
8?
8, yes.
That I didn't know.
Right, exactly. I also knew only as a story from my mother about it. I had 3 sisters, all older than me. And my oldest sister is 14 years above my age. I had a sister in the middle. She is 7 years older than me. And the middle sister was actually 12 years. And my sister that above me was 7 years old.
Can you tell their names and even the ones who passed as well, if you remember them?
The immediately above me, the sister, her name is Saraswati, mm-hmm. which you call Chitta. She passed away in 1998, I think.
No. Oh, anyways.
Yeah, it's 98. Okay. And the other two sisters older than her, they are still living. And the older sister really has a position like a mother to me, because when my mother was sick after I was being born, she was the one who looked after the home and took care of me. And so I have the two older sisters, the sister that was just above me, with whom I had a lot of close transactions and living together. She even came to Chicago to share our home with us. She's no more.
And what are the other sisters' names?
The older sister's name is Chellamma, and her children are actually in the States. And the middle sister's name is Shankari. Shankari Amma. Amma is the name that was denoting
Kunyama.
The family, right.
Who were the other siblings that didn't survive? Do you know their names?
I really do not know their names because I never saw them, and there was no connection. Some of them lived for a few years as children, but they died of disease or they didn't survive. Two of them, I think, was lost in the birth itself.
And
so,
Amma, do we get to hear from you about... could you just tell us about your family, your siblings, the place where you were born?
My father came from... actually worked in Burma, and he's one of the last ones left from Burma in a ship.
Why? Because of the?
When the Pearl Harbor was bombed, he left Burma.
Because the war
started.
Japan had
and
come into Burma.
I was born after the Second World War, at the end of the Second World War in Kerala. I am the only one who is born in Kerala, and I am the one who lived in Kerala least.
What does that mean? The rest of your siblings?
The rest of them were born in outside Kerala.
In Burma?
Three of them were born in Burma, and my youngest sister was born in Calcutta.
I didn't know that.
But I am the only one who was born in Kerala, but I lived mostly in Calcutta. And my father had a very good job, and he was working as an accountant for one of the British companies.
Jessup.
Mm-hmm. And then he was in Calcutta after he came back from Burma. And I had one brother, and I have three sisters. My brother passed away when he was 50 years old. My older sister is quite older than me, and she is in Kerala. My second sister is right now in Kerala, and my youngest sister is in Mysore.
Can you tell me their names?
My older sister's name is Sarojini. My brother who passed away, his name was Aravindakshan, and he's called Appu. The sister above me is Kamala, and you call her Kamala Valiamma. And my youngest sister is Jayashri, and we call her Jaya.
Okay. So, Achu, is there anything more you want to say about stories from your childhood? I have one favorite one that you tell all the time about. Maybe you can share the one that you tell about the cat. You know the one about the cat, your favorite little cat? Can you tell that story again?
I want to tell you something before that.
Okay.
It's not a story, actually. Yeah. You asked about the beginning, mm-hmm. right? What we told you is the beginning of when I was born, or my ancestral family and their status. But it's also important to mention the beginning here, because I had two beginnings.
Okay, yeah, let's hear about your second beginning.
So the second beginning is also starting from zero, to tell you the truth, because the government of India did not allow any foreign exchange grant to the people who left the country to come outside. So it was very hard for me to bring in any money with me when we were living there. So all I was given was $5 worth. and it also took some expense on the way. And then I had a couple of friends in England whom I just stayed for one afternoon before catching the flight to Chicago. I took £3 or £4 from them. And this is all the wealth or the beginning of financial position that I had that I came into Chicago with.
Maybe we can back up first, because it would be nice to hear the whole story, and I think we have enough time, of how we got from your childhood to when you came to America, and maybe that will just be volume one. but maybe if you could tell us, give us some of the flavor of your childhood, what it was like for you. I know that you and I had very different childhoods, and I think, Amand, you had very different childhoods as well.
My childhood came through, every day was of meager means.
I remember you told us the story of making rope from the coconut husk.
See the...
Or the coconut choir.
One of the means of buying grocery in U.S. terms, you know, we were just buying what is enough to cook a meal.
Mm-hmm.
So now these coconut husks, you know, coconut is a natural crop we have, and these coconut husks were put into the water. They will decay, and my sisters will beat them out and get the fiber out. And we put the fiber out to dry up around the house. And then once it is dry, it is ready to be spun into rope. And they themselves will make the rope by hand. And then a couple of small bundles of rope that they made through the day, I would take it to the local shop and trade that for whatever small amount that we can get. And that with that, I would, you know, whatever they tell me to bring home, whatever the shop has there, I'll bring it home, and that's what our dinner would be.
How much would you get maybe for a bundle?
Oh, this one bundle would be maybe a fraction of a rupee at those time, you know, maybe 1/10 or 1/4 of a rupee.
And what would
and
you...
1 rupee is actually today's level, 45 rupees make $1.
And what would you eat with that? What was
that? We will get by tapioca, the roots, or some brown sugar type of product, and some salt and some spices, little bit. But sometimes, you know, what they make one day won't be enough to get all these things together. So sometimes we take credit from the shop, promising the next day's rope that we made will be given to him, and so that I will take it enough like that. So the days will go on like this. And it was a lot of challenge in those days. Never felt anything less of ourselves for doing this. Because this is what we produced and this is what we lived on. And also my father would bring something once in a while from the places that he had tutoring done. And some of them, of course, they were more well-to-do than us. That is why they could afford to have someone come and tutor their children. So they will give in kind, not in money, but they would give rice and, you know, produce like coconut and whatever they had. This would be his payment, and this would come to our home. And this is how our family actually maintained itself. And for the same reason, you know, coming to the next subject, is my sisters could never go for a higher education. They could only carry out the education that they could walk to a primary school that was next to our house. I had the privilege of coming out of that kind of condition when I was growing up.
Well, that's an interesting part, is how did that happen, considering A, Thuggery is such a remote place, B, when I go back there aren't a whole lot of people even now who have left Thuggery. For you at that time, what was it, 1940s, 1950s, to have gone on and received an education beyond primary school?
See, it was a lot of hardship, but beyond that, understand that my father was a person who was involved in teaching children. So the value of education was ingrained in our thinking process. You should study, you should grow, learn more. This kind of upbringing was there in the very beginning of itself. And so that was the thought level.
But it takes a pretty extraordinary amount of energy.
It did. Because there was no way, that there was no transportation. The grammar school was next door to the house. And I was first all along in the grammar school level because of the pressure and the inspiration given by my parents and my sisters. So having completed that, the next middle school level, you know, that is from fifth grade onwards, that was a mile and a half away, but we had no roadways to walk there. We were all countryside roads, and when during the monsoon times they would be flooded, we'll have to wade through the water, which is sometimes waist deep, sometimes even above my head level. So I would hang on to taller friends and then carry our clothes and books in one hand and hang on and get off across the other side. It was a lot of adventure.
Were you
a lot
short?
Of fun. I was short. And this is how we got to the
school. Amma, were you short?
I am always short.
And when I grew up a little taller, I was given a canoe.
You got your own canoe?
Just like you guys would go on bike. We used to go on canoes and go through this water, get across to the school grounds and lift the canoe up and put it under the coconut tree or something and then walk into the building. And it's such a small canoe. It's a one-man canoe.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the type of life, and it's pretty even hard to imagine that this is how we lived at this time.
Did you ever
Another stark reality is that we had no electricity. We had kerosene lamps. Sometimes we used to, churn out oil from the coconut, meat, and the coconut oil lamps, and with wicks. And to study in that kind of lamps, to sit late, to study up to 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock during the exam time, it's a lot of stress because there's not enough light. And the house was small, and if there is monsoon or rain or wind or something, it is even it's harder to stay with it. But still we had to fight these conditions and come through it.
So
the desire to learn and the inspiration by the parents and the sisters and the relatives and the whole people of the whole village, this was a lot of incentive to continue.
How much did, I know that Thuggery was a very poor place, but you also had various castes that were living, and you all went to school together. And I know also you were in Kerala at a time when there was a lot of change,
mm-hmm.
Probably maybe later when you were older. Can you talk a little bit about
that? Yes,
that
is true. The caste system was very ingrained into the strata of the society. But during my growing period, I could see the differences and the way it was people behaved because of the caste, and the caste system was in place. People were differentiated based on caste. With the little farmland that we had, the people who would work in our farmland with my parents and with me, they were not allowed to enter our house. They could only come into the courtyard and stand far away because they did not have the permission to come approach. Our own permission, by the caste system, did not allow them to come into the house and meet with us. They were, lower caste people. They could only stand far away and talk from the distance. This is such a stark, terrible, very inhuman thinking. But that was in the system, so to them it was not inhuman. Even to the lower caste people it was not inhuman because they were used to it through many, many, many generations. But during our time, the political climate was a lot more active, and even the lower class people were getting more aware of how much of an oppressed condition that they were had. Frankly speaking, the Communist Party of China and Russia were influencing the Indian, the lower caste people more, and the Communist Party became a political force over there. So we were all aware of this.
Wasn't it though that the Nayars were typically the ones, if you look at the caste, it was the Nayar caste that really took up the communist
Nayar
political ideology.
Took up the communist, and also with the support of the lower caste people.
So
the Nayar caste gave them the leadership, because Nayar caste also were the feudalists. I am from the Nayar community. I'm a forward class person. At the same time that we recognized the need for the social change. So there was a lot of transformation that was taking place in the community there. So the lower caste people who were just laborers They themselves started having the benefit of education. A lot of programs were instituted for them. So the children of these people who would work in our field will be our friends and we will act equals, but our parents would not be equals because of the caste difference was still working with them.
Can you tell us any stories of how across caste, as children, you felt like equals? How about the story of eating together at the schoolyard?
Right, right. You know, the person who was working in our paddy field, he will call me Lord. That is the word that in
how
English
do you say
again
in Malayalam?
Is Thamburan.
He called you that?
Yes.
You're kidding me.
I will feel awkward because his son is my friend and he is there with me when his father calls me Thamburan. You know, it was such a kind of a terrible thing to take. But he will be studying with me in my room, reading the books together because he does not have enough. So I could never feel that he belonged to a place where that is way below my status, because I myself was poor. Only this fake caste imagery was there for me, for people to think.
So everybody was poor. It didn't matter really what caste.
Exactly. But some people were richer than us. But what I'm talking about is poor or rich, the caste system was there. And the differentiation on caste was actually practiced by all the people.
So tell me, Acha, what was...
So something you asked me, what I did was that when we go to school, we would be given lunch in a container to take it in the school. My lunch was very small lunch because we did not have much to give, little bit of rice, cooked rice. But even from that rice, we will keep a portion. And the lower caste persons, children who are there among my friends, we will eat together and we will share our lunch with them. And because he would not afford to bring lunch to the school. So this is the type of thinking that we developed. And honestly speaking, the political change that came through the communist influence and also the generations recognizing the meaningless, inhuman approach to the caste system's imposition on people, a lot of things have changed. Today, the castes are only namesake, really speaking. The castes have changed.
So tell me, what we've never talked about this, but I know that you were politically involved with the Communist Party. What was your role in that? And
there used to be a students' wing of the Communist Party, which is called Student Federation. I used to be involved in that, not because that I had understood what communism was, only because I felt that is where some kind of a socialist change of thought could come.
Mm-hmm.
So being a socialist person, of my attitude towards the people who are suffering, I was more inclined and more sympathetic to their causes. So that made me become an active worker of the Student Federation.
Okay.
This was a big difference. I could not let many people know that I was a member of that kind of an organization.
Why?
Because that was not would be welcomed by people who are in the forward class where we belong to.
Oh, really? They didn't appreciate. But I thought, like I said...
But while going into college level and all that, there was no issue.
So this was before college?
Yes, before college.
Okay.
But by the time it was in college that I was actively involved in it.
Okay.
And knowingly, I mean, you know, it was quite obvious that what kind of organization we supported.
You know, Amma, I don't know if you feel like talking, but it might be also nice to hear if you have any memories or childhood stories that you want to share. What's maybe the first, one of your first memories from childhood? How about celebrations, Onam, and the various, you know, or Shivratri even, your birthday?
I don't know.
What was the, you were in Kerala until how old, Emma?
I was in and out of Kerala for a while. And the one story I remember with my cousin and my brother, I was very naughty. And they were growing some plants, putting a lot of time to grow it, you know, and we had our servants to take care of it, but my cousin and my brother was about 8-10 years older than I was, They both were every day going and looking at the plant, and I went and tried to pull it out one day, and I pulled it out. So they both took me and pulled. They were throwing me in the pond. So my grandmother came and took me from there. And I was very, very naughty, and I was very spoiled when I was small.
You were spoiled. Yeah, that's interesting.
That is the story I remember.
So how did, how did you and Amma meet?
Well, that's another long, long story.
Can we get a shortened version?
Short version of this. You see, when I finished my grammar school, I went to this middle school. And when I finished there, of course, I took to college. So my education tried continued. And I had a lot of appetite for going through all this education. I did very well with it. And finally, I wanted to go and do engineering and degree. And this is such a history for my family, but nobody ever has come out of my home. I was really the pioneer to do this. So the only... being in the forward class, the competitive level was very stiff for me to get admission to an engineering college, a professional program, because the number of seats were low and the forward class people were very heavy. But on a lower class, if it belonged, it would have been easier for me to get into that. So finally, I did not end up getting admission to a program that is for a degree education in engineering. So while I'm pursuing my basic bachelor's degree final year, I decided to leave my home state, took permission from my parents, and applied to a college that is in Calcutta, which is about 1,200 miles away from my home. The name is, it's a very, very famous university. It's known as Jadavpur University. It was established in 1900. So one of the well-known institutions for technical studies. Actually, the university itself was established as a lab for making bombs and chemical warfare against these in the freedom fight of India.
Oh, wow.
So that lab and technology actually turned out to be a university and became one of the finest institutions in India today. You know, it is. So I was taken admission there, and then I went to Calcutta. Mm-hmm. And Amma's sister was actually doing a master's program.
Kamala Valyama
in the arts college. So, you know, being so far away from Kerala, there was a connection that was established because we both belonged to the same language-speaking people. Then I visited her home many times and met her parents many times, and that is our beginning of the connection was.
So then,
that established.
How did you both end up in America?
Well, I came first, of course, and there is a lot of story. I'm just cutting through short all these things. What happened was that I finished my engineering, and before even graduating, I got an employment in Bombay from Calcutta. I took the job in Bombay, and of course, I had to support my family, my sisters, and my parents, and all that. You know, because I was the first pioneer who came ever out, even to get a job from my. You know, my background was so weak, right? In spite of that, my thoughts continued to go further. So I took after working there for about 4 years, I decided that I would leave India and search for my field outside of India.
But
what
was your field?
Not necessarily electronics, telecommunication engineering. And not necessarily the United States. I thought I would go to England. You know, British, we were all members of British Commonwealth, you know, India. So there was no problem for getting visa to go to the UK because we were part of the membership.
I thought India was not part of the Commonwealth.
Oh, we were. Only in the last, I think about 15 years ago, that was dissolved. Until then, India was a Commonwealth country. So I could get a visa. All I needed was a work permit. So I went to the British consulate in Calcutta. Just gave an application. In 3 months, the work permit came. Then I went to my parents and told them that I would rather leave the country and search for further growth in my career and profession. Even though I was the only son of my parents and they would miss me forever, they still felt this is the right thing for me to do. So they said, you go.
And then you got married somewhere in the middle of all of this.
That was just a week before I left.
You and Amma decided shotgun.
So I went to Bombay, told my employer that I'm leaving your job and I'm leaving for England. And this employer actually was a person who took after me like a father. He liked me very much. And he said, why did you ever want to go to England? How come you never told me that you wanted to leave the country? So he said, no, you're not leaving my job. Go back to Calcutta and carry on with the work and you will hear from me. In 3 weeks' time, I had a letter from a company in Chicago stating that further to your application for employment, which I never did, we are sending you the letter of employment. Please go to the U.S. consulate, proceed with your immigration papers. So the company that gave me this job was the company there was a collaboration with whom I was working with our Indian company. So he was visiting here, and he was gracious enough to help me, instead of going to England, come to the United States. So this was the beginning. So it took me about 13 months to process the paperwork. And I really felt it was necessary to have the marriage thing over before coming to the States. So we got married on 18th of August of 1967, and I was leaving about a week later.
That was quick.
So that's how our marriage took place. It was a very unceremonious marriage.
Not very traditional either,
Not traditionally either. And her parents came, my relatives came, and we met, and then it was
Where was the actual wedding at?
It was in Trichur.
Okay.
It was we went to the temple. It was consummated. And 3 days later, I left. And 3 months later, she got the visa and came to Chicago. So this is now since 1967. So it is 37 years, 38 years of... this is the family.
Marriage bliss.
Mm-hmm. Bliss.
So, Amma, what's your first memories of coming to... How did you come to Chicago? What was... you flew on... I remember you telling me the whole pathway from India to...
I came in British Airways.
Oh, I thought it was Swiss Air or something.
No, first time I came in British.
Swiss Air.
No, it was not Swiss Air, but it's another airline.
Pan Am.
From India to London, I came in Air India. From there to here, I came in Pan Am. And I remember Bhaktan, one of our friends, came to pick me up.
Who's that?
With him. That you have never met him.
Mm-hmm.
He's now, I think he's in Arizona now.
He's in Mississippi.
We haven't met him for a long time, but he was like a big brother to me. And he used to come and eat every day, even though I didn't know how to cook.
You didn't know how to cook?
No.
Nobody taught you in India how to cook?
No. I went to school. I finished my studies and I got married and came here. I never got a chance to stay home and cook.
Good for you. Because you were... What were your studies, Amma? What did you...
I did my bachelor's in botany, geology and chemistry.
Oh my goodness.
I did my master's in geology. And I wanted to do more master's in other subjects. But by the time I got married and came after... coming here, I decided to go into Montessori training.
Why did you decide to do Montessori training?
Somebody I met, they said that it is nice and I really liked it.
Why?
Because I work with little children and I love them. So I decided to stay with it and I still work in that.
So what did you think when you first landed in Chicago? Was it cold? Was it?
It was in November. It was very cold that year. 1967 was one of the real cold winter. They had a lot of snow before I came. And first few months, we didn't even have a car. It was very hard because when you have to do everything yourself and hardly there were that many Indians in this country. There were nobody to ask questions. But we had good friends, only a few people, but it was very nice and hardly there were any ladies.
You were the only woman?
I had another lady in our group.
Who was the group? Who's our cousins and our American Indian family? Who are those people?
Dr. Pillai, he was not married, and Poti, he was not married that time, and we had a friend, he is in Arizona, he is
Dr. Revi,
he was called Kupar, and then Bhaktan, and then there was a couple, Jayaraman and Vilasini, I don't think you know them.
And Unni uncle?
Unni came later.
Oh, okay.
These were our immediate friends.
So, Acha, what was the beginning like when you came to the States?
Well, my friends came with the picture of me to meet me at the airport because they did not know who I was.
And who? How did they even know to pick you up? Who?
Because a friend of mine who came for a training in Ford Motor Company had a couple of friends here, that is Dr. Pillai and Dr. Poti.
Oh.
So he wrote to them that one of my friends is coming and you have to take
Radhakrishnan,
Detroit. So he sent them one of my pictures and they were at the airport looking for me to recognize who is this.
So Pillai uncle and Poti uncle came.
Poti uncle came.
Oh, right. And what was the car? You always remember the car.
This is Charger. Pillai uncle's Charger was. I don't know if they even make that model anymore. But see, one thing I did when I came here on, I think, 27th of August or so.
1967.
And the following Monday, I searched with my employer to find out where I could go to school. See, this drive that was put in from the very childhood, it never stopped. So the very 2-3 days within that window, IIT, I registered for my master's.
IIT?
Illinois Institute of Technology. So I took my master's there in 3 years part-time. So daytime we would work, the nighttime we would go to school.
And this
I had friends like that.
And Amma was also working part-time.
Mine was daytime.
And you asked why we took Montessori. I had a reason for searching. We found a friend who took Montessori training. We felt this would really the most fitting situation that we would not have to put our own children to babysitters. We would be with children.
We certainly benefited.
Exactly. And it worked very well. Now we have a wonderful school that we own. Many, many children have been educated through that. And our school has become a part of the community. In the western suburb of Chicago. So I did my master's and continued with, and then I continued the education, did an MBA with that. So I had my job level, education, both progressing.
Was it hard for both of you to, when you first came to the United States, that being far from your families in India, what was that like for you? And how did you maintain communication? And when did you go back to India to see family?
It took me 5 years to go back there. It was mostly letter communications. That's all I had. After 5 years, I went and saw my parents and my sisters and all that.
What was it like for you to go back after the first 5 years?
Oh, it was such an emotional peak of thing, I could not go primarily because of financial reasons. I was going to school and, all those things. So it was not very easy to. It was a lot of expense would be necessary to go there. And after that, I used to go every 3 to 5 years. And Amma was even still less frequent to go to India.
I went in 1970 first time. My father got sick. We got a cable. That time you couldn't call anybody. We got a cable and in the morning I was very close to my father and I left right up in the evening. I got there and spent 1 month with him. And I was fortunate to spend some time, and before I left, he passed away.
Oh, you were there when he passed?
Yes, 1970.
What was that like for you, Amma?
I was happy I could spend time with him. He was conscious and everything, but before I said I have to leave, and within a week, he passed away, when I told him I have to leave.
Was there a funeral?
Oh, yes. Everything was done in Calcutta, and then we all went to Benares. Actually, I studied in Benares, and that is a Hindu religious place, and we all went, and we had some last rituals and everything.
Did you put his ashes there?
Yeah. And then 1974, I think, we went. Yeah. When Rajesh was 2 years old, we went together.
So tell us, we get to the children. Or maybe we'll wrap up, actually, because one thing I wanted to do is before Acha, you know, you have such a beautiful singing voice. And if you're not too shy, I thought maybe you could sing.
I don't know what to sing.
I'll sing with you. The only Malayali song that I ever sing is Tetchi Mandaram. So I thought maybe we could just do a little.
You could do that.
Or you can bless us with another beautiful, because we only have 5 minutes left. So I thought
it'd be. Okay. Well, I just really wanted to know another accomplishment, but it was the, I want to mention it, in spite of the education, finance, growth, profession, we were also, our religious beginning was not less, and it initiated into a big movement in Chinmaya Mission, and it has thousands of children and families are benefiting by that institution, which we are very proud of, and it's a blessing that we could become part of it and still run that institution this way. So just like you have all been blessed, our work has also blessed a lot of children, thousands of them and families. This is a great accomplishment, we feel. So you want to sing together?
We can sing together. Yeah. I would love it if you would sing any of your beautiful...
Tetchi Mandaram, we will sing. Okay, go ahead. It is a prayer to the Lord Krishna. It's not just a song, it's a prayer. Right?
Well, I only know two verses, so you're going to have to carry the rest.
Tetchi Mandaram Tulasi Pichai Kamalagal Jati Guru Vayurappa Ninne Kani Kani Nam Tetchi Mandaram Tulasi Pichai Kamalagal Jati Guru Vayurappa Ninne Kani Kani Nam.
So we didn't finish. it would be good now, maybe if you could tell us what it was like to have children. And I know that it wasn't easy to have children also. There were some difficulties and but you know what it was like at the beginning of, and what's the story of your children, us.
You want to say?
Yeah, you can start.
We both have different perspectives.
I know. Emma, what's your perspective? What was?
We didn't have children for first 5 years because we wanted to settle down and have some money before we have our had our children. So when we decided to have our first one, the first one I miscarried. That was okay. I had a surgery, appendix surgery. We did not have any insurance that time.
Oh, really?
And I was about to burst my appendix. Our friends were at home, and they rushed me to the hospital and found out that it was appendix rupturing.
Your friends were doctors.
Yes. And then they found out that I was expecting, and I lost the baby that time. That was okay. The second one, we really wanted to have the baby, but I miscarried. So,
what year was that, Emma?
It was 71 or something. I don't remember.
No. It was before that. It was in the late 60s.
Okay.
Towards 69, 70 time.
Yes. Anyway, and then 72 when I got, 71 and when I got pregnant again and I really wanted to have the baby, I was so worried. But I was working and it all went very well. The Rajesh was born in 1972, July.
July
10th.
good.
Then after a while, of course, we were waiting, and of course, Rajesh wanted to have a baby brother. We planned for the baby. Of course, I wanted a girl.
How long did you want a girl for, Emma?
About 3 years, it was exactly.
You always tell me my whole life I was waiting for a girl.
Yes, the first one I wanted a girl, and he wanted a boy. So it okay happened, and the second one I really wanted a girl, and I
you
was
both
having
wanted little, a girl.
When I was having little problem, and when you were born, the doctor told me, "So many, it is a girl." I was so happy, and Rajesh was really thrilled.
So those days we could not know ahead of time.
Yeah, Rajesh was thrilled.
Yes, and the third one came along without expecting, and I didn't even know I was carrying a baby.
You didn't
until I was four months pregnant.
Because you had just had me, so.
Yes. And
Dinesh was born just a year and
yeah, exactly
after...
because 70, you were born on 75, May 13th, and he was born on 76, May 29th. But I was so happy because the three, you know, you and Dinesh were very close. So that is what we have wanted anyway.
How did you choose our names?
We both agreed with Rajesh. The second one, actually, when I was expecting the first one, I wanted the name, if it was a girl, Supriya. And my friend wanted the name Supriya too. Fortunately, she got a boy. And she called me up and she said that you can pick up the name Supriya.
Do you know if I was a boy, what you were going to name me?
No. Okay. I really wanted a girl.
So you were determined.
And Dinesh, we had to get a name in the hospital and we just came up with Dinesh.
Acha, what was it like to you when you had your first child?
It was a lot of excitement. You know, what Amma said was pretty much correct because, you know, my first paycheck was $80 a week. And from there, the taxes would go. The net amount was so low. And she was not working, actually, income. You know, she had to go through
training,
the training and all
Montessori
that stuff.
Training.
So going to school in the night and working for the small, even though the company was gracious enough to bring me, their paycheck was very low. So we got to live within our means. So it was not all that financially strong to get off with it. But at the same time, you know, we really wanted to have children. You know, we are very family-minded people. But since she had these losses a couple of times, the doctor also suggested it is better to take a little time so that her system physically will become stronger too, so that we would not lose the third one.
Right.
So that is another reason why, you know, it took so long to start a family with the children.
And it must
but
have been
finally, when it came through,
so
it was
special
the greatest,
when Raj
greatest
came.
Excitement, yeah. To tell you the truth.
And how did
that
you?
Was the biggest day of our life.
And how did you tell your family back home in India?
Oh, it's like a festivity.
Especially a boy.
Yeah, you know, they're all.
They would have been disappointed if I came first.
not necessarily, but they will consider it as an extra blessing.
No.
So that's that type of a thing. But the second one, we really wanted to have a girl, a daughter. So one boy, one son and one daughter would be our family. We decided to have it there and nothing more. But then Dinesh just came along and we never knew that.
Acha, can you just tell the story? Acha, just tell the story of the day Dinesh was born. And
Dinesh
was
born. Amma was really about to begin the labor. And one of my cousins came home.
Cousins?
Yeah.
Yes.
You know, Kutten.
Oh,
Subbu's dad.
Okay.
Yeah. Then we said we'll go and buy some, we were going
vacuum
to buy
cleaner.
A vacuum cleaner.
We did we not were that. Moving.
We were moving, you know. So he said, well, let's go to Polk Brothers. You know, I don't know if Polk Brothers exists anymore in Chicago. So we went to Polk Brothers in the city to buy this vacuum cleaner. And it took us more than 2 to 2.5 hours to get back. And she was in trouble. Really almost ready to go. You know, the third delivery and all, they don't take time. First delivery takes a long time. By the time I came home, she was really screaming. She could not hold. She went, took her to the hospital right away, and there was no time for paperwork. She had to be rushed into a room and didn't even get to the delivery room. She delivered Dinesh. It was a rush delivery, almost happening in the car, sort of.
When we were little, you used to say, you know, we didn't plan Dinesh. So Raj and I used to joke that Dinesh was an accident and that Amma literally gave birth to him on the toilet or something.
Right. But the thing is that, you know, the God has plans.
And Dinesh is everyone's little favorite one, so. Although he's still little.
So you're so happy about it. You understand that.
So, in your opinion, Acha, what is the greatest accomplishment of your children? What do you feel proud about of your children?
To tell you the truth, this I will speak without getting emotional.
Well, that's already happening.
The character. The level of responsibility, the personality that you three have taken. I'm very proud of that.
Well, we can honestly say, I think we all talk about it, that, you know, there are times when we say, we wish, you know, Acha, you could just sit back and be happy because we're so happy with our lives and it's all because of what you made us, both of you made us.
That is true. See, all of you having done very good in education, everything is normal in terms of our culture because we are very education-oriented people. We would make that happen. If the children are fit to have education, we would give it and get it done. Money is not an issue. Expense is not an issue because education is what makes life to be respectable. We recognize it. But at the same time, to have a value system and the culture going with it, to reach a personality level that fits the height of the need of the society, to have good citizens as your son and daughters, is a great blessing.
Amma, what do you
and
feel?
We are very proud of that, no matter whatever happened.
Well, what we're very proud of our parents for all the sacrifices that they made so that we could have the opportunities in our life that we did, and that not only the opportunities, but I'm proud of my brothers as well, and I feel that we're good people. And you made us good people.
See, there is one more point that this is what will get carried forward. This is my thinking. You know, when you have your families, you extend this family, the same strength will continue because it cannot happen any other way. Because you all have grown up to be so nice, well-educated, well-thinking, good people. And how can the next generation be any less? I don't think so.
Amo, how did you feel the day Dinesh and Neethi decided to get married?
I was very happy. Actually asked me, how do you like them getting married? I said, if they both like each other, it is the best thing. And I was very happy when Rajesh and Charu, they decided to get married. And I hope you will bring somebody very nice too. And one thing I want to tell you, my father always told me when I was growing up, if you have money, somebody can take it from you. If you have education, nobody can take it from you. And I was very proud of my father giving me education the same way I wanted all of you to be really well-educated people. And very happy you all three did it very well.
Well, there were some doubts at the beginning when I was a slower learner of the three.
No, we never had doubts.
I did. But one of the things that we all, will, you know, I think we were very lucky is that we got to go to school with our mother as our teacher. And a very good school that still is around today. And I know that we feel that, you know, education has been at the base of our family.
The reason we continue with our Montessori school is simply because we love it. It gives education to other children. And not just from a business standpoint. It's because of what it contributes. You know, it has a lot of value.
I know also that, Acha, you wanted to talk about something else, and I'm sorry to keep shifting gears so quickly, but I know we don't have a lot of time. But there's a very influential person in the life of our family. And, you know, considering also, Acha, you know, there's some parts of the stories you haven't always shared with us. I know that your view on religion growing up was far different, and there was a big change for that. For you when you came to it's not even when you came to the States. I know it was afterwards. Could you tell us more broadly first your views on religion, how that changed and what it was like to meet your Swami?
See, to me, the religion was not just religion. To me, the understanding of religion was very traditional, only in terms of religious practices from back home. But as my education developed, I saw the world and saw the people, especially the influence of the caste system, that it had a very difficult, deep gash on my mind. And then having met people of other nations and other religions, I recognized the value of religion is in spirituality rather than the practice. The practice of religion can change, but the goal of spirituality is the same, no matter whether you are a Christian, whether you are an Islam, whether you are a Hindu, it doesn't matter. Because the spiritual side of religion is to the growth of individual inwardly, and all religions support that. this is my constant point of view that I strengthened it. And during this period is when I met my master. This was also not a planned incident that took place. You know, someone called me to join. And because, see, another thing is that we started Gita Mandalam. Remember that organization? This was also with the same idea that with the material accomplishment that we do, you know, when we become very accomplished in life with material wealth and comforts, religion should come to tame us into recognizing the real value of life, what it should be. And this was the idea that we started that Hindu religious establishment, Gita Mandalam, but somehow it didn't take off in the way that we wanted. But during this period, some other leading members of our community called me to see if I would associate with them in establishing a committee for organizing a discourse series by Swamiji, Swami Chinmayananda.
Had you heard Swami Chinmayananda before?
I was, when I was 16, 17 years old, when I was a Communist Student Federation worker. At that time, I saw him and I have seen him for 21 days every day because I was in the National Cadet Corps, the military training group of the students. That was all the colleges had it. Our college's Silver Jubilee function, Swami Chinmayananda was the keynote speaker for 21 days. And I was deputed as an orderly to look after his needs in the house that he was hosted. So every day I would see him, but unfortunately, my mind was not spiritual. My mind was not religious because I was the part of the Student Federation.
So did you...
So I just see him and he put a tremendous impression on me, but never had the mind to be with him and continue with him.
Did you ever question him at that time or...
Never.
Did you say anything
to him? He was such an imposing personality. I felt there was something different about him that I am yet to understand. So I was awed by his presence and vision. This is all I could do. And I never questioned him, never disbelieved him. Because when I heard his speeches, I felt that he shared many of the views that I also shared. He was very, very, very modern in thinking, very equal in his outlook. He was not a religious person. He was a spiritual mind. And this really, I felt very strongly about him at that time, with a lot of respect. But then, you know, God knows, you know, it took so many years. This was in 1955. And it took until 1977, see how many years went by, that event took place again in Chicago. And it was totally coincidental, you know, just not at all planned. These people asked me, can you join us to organize a series of discourse for 10 days for Swami Chinmayananda? We are making a committee together for the Hindu temple of Chicago, and I just fell for it because I heard his name mentioned and it was just a triggering point to meet him again. So that really took me on. I became very close, and to cut it really short, my relationship with him was like a father and son. And you know that. And you are all being fortunate to be blessed by him, to understand him, to be close to him. And his vision and his work we took without any question. And that has become one of the most dynamic institutions of our society in Chicago, serving hundreds of families. And we feel so blessed to be supporting it and running it the way it should run. And so this is known as Chinmaya Mission. It's a worldwide institution. Swami Chinmayananda is the greatest individual that could enlighten another individual and help them like this. And this is our association. So, considering my personal life, beyond all the personal gain that I have had in terms of employment, wealth, our home and property and riches that I consider his association and what he has brought into our life as inner strength to be a lot more worth and valuable.
Do you have any memories or anything that Swamiji has said to you that really, I mean, I know there are probably many, but is there any one memory or thing that Swamiji has said to you that has just been like an epiphany or like something that stays with you?
He has always insisted on never leaving the responsibility of work. Give more than you take. This is the message he has always given. Because you can always get things, but the difficulty is in giving. Learn to give more than you are able to take. This is the philosophy of his work, and this is how his whole life was. And I feel very blessed to understand that in my life, and I have lived like that. This is exactly what stands out about Swamiji to me in my life.
You want to drink your water? You can drink. One of the things also that came from Chinmay Mission is a deeper understanding of the Bhagavad Gita.
Right.
Is there anything from the Gita that stands out to you, something that sticks with you, or things that you think about on a daily basis that, you know, wisdom from the Gita that you feel is important to not forget?
Duty-bound living is the message of the Gita.
Can you give us some verses of the Gita?
Karmanyeva adhikaraste ma phalesu katajana.
Means?
This is the greatest philosophy of practical living, that what we are entitled for is only to do the work, not to be influenced by the result that will come out of our work. If we are influenced by the what we are going to get from the work, that the result that will produce, our own output in terms of putting the work will not be 100%, because we will be limited by your expectations. So Gita proclaims, for an average person, this is the philosophy of Karma Yoga. That means your own work will become your means of inner growth. Yoga means to unite with the higher. Through work, we grow and become, you know, inner growth comes up. So this is the greatest philosophy of Gita. Along with other philosophical explanations of different means of human inner expansion, Karma Yoga is the most practical approach. Almost everybody can practice. Work without selfish dependence on the result of your work. In other words, do your work. Let the result come to you. And at the same time, the same verse says, Ma karma phalahe durpu, ma te sangostu akarmani. Gita also says, people may think that why, if you don't have to expect the result, why would you work? What is the incentive? Gita instructs that never shy away from action. Never associate yourself with inaction. This is the next passage in the same verse. It's one of the famous verses in the Bhagavad Gita. So this is the example of our life. This would be the motto of our life.
So, Amma, I know, you know, we think about the future, and sometimes we, you know, think, what do you think the next, what do you want in the future for your children, for your life?
Do your best and be happy.
What do both of you think about how you want people to remember you?
To me?
Yeah.
Person who lived a simple life. But committed life with the right understanding. This is important. Never expended our life only for personal gains. Personal gains always came. There was no question about it. If you worked right, you get your benefits. But the work to come out along with your gains to someone also to benefit, this is a lot, even a greater accomplishment. And I think with Swamiji's blessings and Lord's grace, people will recognize both of us in that light, rather than what we have done for ourselves.
We only have a few minutes left, so I just wanted, Acha, could you just tell the story of the cat? That will be
you
the last
to remind
story.
Me about
okay,
it.
So you had a favorite cat.
My father?
Yeah.
That's just a joke, you know.
I love that story.
See, my father never liked cats. So every time when we eat dinner, this cat will come around and sit with us. He wanted to drive it out. And I was opposed to it because that was my cat. That was my best friend.
How old were you?
I was in maybe 7, 8, 9, that age level. So one day, what he did was he put the cat in a gunny sack and tied the thing, and the cat was in the sack.
Did you know?
At that time, yes. And I did not know.
Oh, you didn't know.
I did not know. Because if I knew this would not happen, I would cry and make a big scene in the house. Without my knowledge, my father did it. So he put this cat in the canoe to go across the river. To put him on the other side of the river, the cat can never come back home. This was his thinking, you know. So he took the sack with the cat in the canoe and went on the boat to cross the river. This is in the night, of course, you know. So he took the sack out, untied the sack, and just loosened the sack into the bank of the river, thinking that the cat has jumped out of it and he's safe. He came home. Actually, when he came home, the cat is sitting in the house. He was there. So he thought he had him in the sack. The cat never went in there. By the time he was tying it out, he had jumped out of the sack and he was sitting there. My father was, my God, I had taken him out and how come he is sitting over here?
You were happy.
I was so happy because I never even knew my father tried this because he was all along in the house. So this story stands out that, you know, that ever since he never tried to take him away because it didn't work. So.
Well, thank you, Amanacha, for doing
this. This is nice. It was a good surprise for us. I never knew there was
StoryCorps. Yeah.
Right, really speaking. There's a lot about our life that we cut them short, but we'll write someday.
Yeah, we have to. Right. Thank you.
Thank you.